Well, first of all, in Cuba, pretty much all the education is public and free of charge. And there are schools in every neighborhood. So you have a bunch of schools. I myself grew up in a low income, very working class neighborhood here in Havana, and I had like three schools to go to near my home. This means that if you are, my parents were college graduated, but I went there with other people that were not sons or daughters of college graduated. Cuban school is actually very inclusive, and as everyone has to go to the same school, either if you are the daughter or the son of a surgeon or the daughter of the son of the owner of a restaurant that makes $2 million a year, which we do have some of those, or if you're just in a family that is working class, then all of these children go to the same school. They wear uniforms and they get books and material, school material from the school. This is a way in which it doesn't matter if you come from a privileged bubble, you enter in a world in which you have to deal with all sorts of people. I feel this doesn't mean that there's not differences and that these differences are not shocking for children sometimes. And if you go further in your life and you want to study at the university, you have to go through these tests, which are kind of hard and are very competitive. And according on how you do in these tests is the specialty that you get. If you are trying to get a highly demanded specialty like journalism or tourism, studying tourism, a degree in tourism, that's kind of a big demanded kind of a specialty, then obviously as it's more competitive, you need a higher grade. But it doesn't matter. You will always, after you pass these tests, everyone gets the opportunity of getting a higher education at some sort of university in Cuba. This means that the access to higher education is granted through merits and how you do in these tests, and it's not according to how much money do you have or where your parents work. I do understand that if you do better in life, it's also because your social and family environment helps you to do better. Of course, this is the case in Cuba as well. Although the access is granted and it's free, you are encouraged to study. So it's quite inclusive, it's quite fair, but this doesn't mean that there aren't challenges. This is going to be the first anniversary of the first reported cases of COVID-19 in Cuba. The first lockdown, which was around like a month and a half after the first case, Cuba in 2020, the situation was quite under control. As it's an island, the airports were closed. The health system in Cuba, as you probably know, it works quite well. And so you had the possibility of following the web of people, of contacts of a person infected with COVID-19. The level of people getting to critical conditions were very low. And the amount of people who died are obviously, if you compare it to any other country of the world, is quite low. The biopharmaceutical industry responded quite fast with drugs to treat COVID-19, and now, as a matter of fact, Cuba has five vaccine candidates. The expectation is that by the summer, massive vaccination will start with a 100% Cuban vaccine. But in terms of the school, how has this worked? The schools were closed. They developed a solution of closing the schools but keeping students in class through television. In Cuba, the internet access is not very good. It's better than it used to be, much better. So you have your phone and you can buy packages of data to use in your phone, but it's still expensive. And obviously not every child has access to internet connection good enough to like being on classes through Zoom or something like that. So the solution to actually get to every student that doesn't have the internet connection at home or the cell phone or the computer, so it's going to be on television. So the entire television programming was reorganized so you could have from physics to biology to Cuban history to Spanish to English, all of that in classes. And there's like a schedule for different grades, so one for primary students, other for high school students. Of course, there are students that don't have televisions at home. I'm talking about like in rural areas or just houses that don't have a TV. So these students are allowed to go to school, keeping all the strict measures. Social distancing, using masks in Cuba is mandatory to use masks. In this regard, it was trying to avoid the impact on students. Then it opened for a couple of months. The entire year was reorganized. They started the course in November, usually it's in September. So they changed the entire schedule so it could fit to finish one semester, the last one that was interrupted in April or May, and then being able to finish the other one. There's a combination of resources being used to keep students engaged in their courses. For the universities, which just a few days ago started the new semester, they're doing it online. It's kind of a work in progress. They're using this platform, which it's supposed to work, but a lot of people are reporting issues. And there's a lot in the way. So Cuba got to internet quite late. It's still expensive and hard because the connection is not very stable and it still costs money. So the solution was to, once you connect yourself through your cell phone to this platform, which is called EVEA for classes content related with your university course, this won't cost. So there's a link between the Ministry of Education and the company that provides the internet service so that students are not charged if they are connected to the platform. The willingness of reaching to everyone is there. The problem is that still is hard because of the access to technology and the very poor internet infrastructure that still exists in this country. There's these daily meetings between the president of the Republic, Miguel Díaz-Canel, and every minister related to these sectors, like education, trade, health, construction. Everyone goes to the same meeting every day. They are reported then on TV. The Minister of Health gives the entire perspective on how the information on how things went the previous day, and then the decisions of what's going to be done to tackle the situation is discussed in these meetings daily. The strategy is holistic. From the very beginning, it was very clear that masks were going to be mandatory. Also, scientists have been advising the president. It's a very closed and coherent strategy, and everyone is saying the same. And this is important because you listen to the local authorities and they say this the same that the head of the government of the province is saying and the head of the country. So this is very important, this coherence, to actually be able to create a strategy and a discipline around taking care of yourself in a context in which obviously the Cuban public health system is under a lot of stress. So the main issue here is to avoid infection, to avoid the transmission, the spread of the virus. In Cuba, the situation is quite different from the one that you can see in the United States. Here, the education system follows the orders of the public health ministry and the guidelines of the government on how to deal with the situation. As a matter of fact, I would say that COVID-19 pandemic has brought to the Cuban public agenda a lot of authorities that usually did not speak that often on TV. And suddenly you're listening to them like every day on TV because they're explaining and teaching and saying how the situation is so people can have a sense of risk and how the situation is. This is a different country. It's a country in which this is more controlled. It's a smaller country than the United States, but definitely the organization in which you have a family doctor, which is a family medical practice that you have very near your home. This doctor knows you, knows like a couple of hundred of people that they take care of. This person searches every day for symptoms. And then if you're sick, this person follows the net of contacts that you have. This functions also for schools. So you have a neighborhood school, then everyone knows your parents and then the contacts. So it's a very different social organization. The perspective has always been to give a coherent and articulated strategy in which everyone follows science in the first place, and then the decisions of the government, which have been extremely advised by scientists who know very well how to deal with this situation. And also, I would say there's a bunch of mathematicians doing forecasts of what to do, when to do it, and what's going to be the situation in the following weeks. And this has been happening since the beginning of the pandemic in Cuba, and this has helped to make decisions and to give a more coordinated design for this strategy against COVID-19. In rural areas, although people are less exposed to the pandemic, they're more affected because of the economic crisis and because they have less ways of getting the information of and content and connection than children that live in cities do. So obviously there's harder for the system to get to these vulnerable groups. So the system, what it's trying to do is taking into account that although internet access is growing, that we do have a programming on TV for education and classes. Not everyone have a smartphone. Not everyone has the possibility of installing a platform for getting content and classes. And not everyone have the money to pay for data, for packages of data. So I think it's quite inclusive, which doesn't mean it's not a challenge for some families to actually keep up with this situation. The first way in which the Cuban education system reflects a commitment to educational equity and social justice is the fact that you always have the opportunity of studying all the way up until you are college graduated or even getting a master's or a PhD for free. And the consequence is, like, for example, more than half of the college populations are women. It's quite impressive the number of college graduated that this country has. I want to speak from my own perspective. So I live in a socialist country and I studied journalism from the best journalism in the world, American, European. I didn't have a political filter around what I learned on journalism and freedom of expression and how to do your job as a journalist. I always say that my education on journalism is far better than the kind of journalism that I've been able to do here in this country. I am so proud of the education I've gotten that I will always feel gratitude for those who were on the way. Many teachers who do work with very low salaries in very austere conditions, and they do it because they do believe that everyone deserves an opportunity and everyone deserves to be educated. And the only way in which you can actually be free is if you are educated enough to understand what are the chains that you still have in your life. I do believe that there's a clear, tangible, remarkable commitment that this country has with education and the fact that everyone gets one to be able to be part of the society and being useful. That doesn't mean that there's not a lot of challenges in the way, like, for example, educating very well a lot of people, and then these people quite well educated don't have jobs that are paid well enough. So a lot of people do immigrate, a lot of people leave because of this, but it's not because of the education. It's because the education that they get is so good that then the workforce, the industry, the economy is not able to feed them in, and then they leave. I do believe this is one of the countries, I would say, in the world, and definitely one of the poorest countries in the world that has a higher commitment with education in every level and in every sector.